We are visiting with Stephen Hunter. Stephen is the author of the latest novel, Eye Ripper. And this is pretty much a story that focuses on inside the mind of Jack the Ripper. And I don't want to give it all away, but we're going to talk to Steve and talk a little bit about, you know, the behind the story, behind the series, as far as this book is. And we'll talk a little bit about himself as well. Stephen, thank you very much for being with us here today.
It's my pleasure. This should be fun.
I hope so. And I'm sure it will. Well, now, everybody has heard, I'm sure, at one time or another about Jack the Ripper. But a lot of people do not know the history, who he was, what his crimes were. They just know that he was a serial killer, bad guy, and basically it. So in this novel, you, as I mentioned, you take us inside the mind of Jack the Ripper. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we get along in the interview. But this is something that I don't think it's been done before, and correct me if I'm wrong, was I right in assessing that perhaps a lot of people know the moniker Jack the Ripper, but not the fact who he was and anything else about him?
Yes, that's very true. I mean, one of the things about Jack that you have to say up front is whoever came up with the name Jack the Ripper was really good. It's a great name. It's a great brand, and people, you know, people know of him, and they have some general fuzzy idea. They know it has to do with England and fog, and they have all sorts of imagery from movies they may have seen and mostly forgotten. But the actual historical Jack has been, if not forgotten, was never learned.
What about the Jack the Ripper as he has been painted by the media, by other authors, by movies? Is that pretty close to what you discovered?
A lot of myths that I am very pleased to do away with. Just start at the beginning. Jack was really only active for about 2.5 months in the fall of 1888 in a district of London called Whitechapel, which was a tenderloin. All towns have them. It's where you find ladies of the night and burlesque places and all, you know, and porn and red light districts, essentially. He killed 5 women. We know he killed these 5 because the physical, the forensics, the bodies were mutilated in the same way. He was very violent. He was remarkably violent. All the women he killed were prostitutes. They were all streetwalkers, which was the lowest form of streetwalkers. He actually killed them. This is something that people don't know. Rather mercifully. By that I mean he didn't cause them much pain. He was not into torturing. He didn't beat. He didn't twist. He didn't break. He didn't do any of those nasty things. He killed them very quickly by cutting their throats, and then he did his grotesque things to the bodies. He was strictly post-mortem. He did this 5 times, and then remarkably he disappeared. And I think that's another reason why we're fascinated by Jack, because we have no idea what happened to him. Did he leave London? Did he commit suicide? Did someone track him down and privately kill him? Did he, there's any number of possibilities. And the fact that it's so open-ended gives people like me a chance to come up with endings to the story and have great fun doing it. I mean, I keep telling people that if you have half as much fun reading this book as I had writing it, you'll have a very good time.
We are visiting with Stephen Hunter. Stephen is the author of the book Eye Ripper, and this is a book that sets aside long guns, scopes, anything that follows Jack the Ripper into the mean streets of Victorian London, and as you mentioned, debunks kind of a lot of the stereotypes, myths about Jack the Ripper. But Stephen, as you mentioned, the fact that what he would do to these ladies, he would wait till they were dead and then do that. And some people would say, well, that's still, you know, obviously it's not something good, but the fact that he killed them right away, and I would imagine, did he kind of scope them out before? Did he know who he was going to go after? Tell us about this, Stephen.
Many of the theories, I mean, one of the great cottage industries of mystery writers is Jack the Ripper theories, and many of the theories are based on the idea that he did, in fact, know who they were and that they, in fact, knew each other. There's no evidence for any of that. They seem to be randomly picked. They were all in different parts of Whitechapel. He pretty much blanketed the district, so it's unlikely that they ever had any Congress or any communication with each other. And the crimes were done so skillfully and so quickly and were so thoroughly well organized that they had more a sense of a commando strike or a highly proficient military operation than any kind of crime of passion that might take place between lovers. One of the theories holds that, I mean, this is a trope I've used, that the person who did the killing only wanted to kill one of them, but killed the other four so that to sort of suggest that a psychotic killer was around and that it wasn't this one particular person's death that was in mind. That's not a theory I've gone with. I try to think about what constitutes evil. Who are the evil people? What do they have in common? And what I came up with was most of them really think they're morally right. They think they're the good guys, and they think because their idea of fixing the world is so perfect that they have the right to kill people in order to achieve this. You see this in the great dictators. You know, Mao and Stalin and Hitler, they didn't see themselves as villains. They saw themselves as heroes who were changing the world and making it better. And the fact that they killed millions and millions of people didn't really bother them because they thought that that was necessary in the river of history, and that history was brutal and violent, and that could be invited. So I tried to invest Jack, my Jack, with that kind of what I call moral vanity, that sense that he was right and what he was doing was in a good cause, even though it involved the deaths of innocent people. And I found that that was much more interesting than simply making him a monolith of evil without any redeeming social values. I mean, he saw good and bad in the universe. He was just trying to find a shortcut to the good, and he thought that the shortcut was through the bad. And that was kind of my concept of modern evil, and I thought that that would have some resonations into our time as well.
Stephen, as you mentioned, our time, and these events took place in the 1800s, and roughly, I would say, I'm not sure about my math here, but about 23 years after the assassination of President Lincoln, and this was an event that shook the world, shook the country. And so my question is, without the current media like we have now, where you can instantly find out what's going on, what and how did the people react to these murders in the 1800s?
Well, Jack was a sensation, and one of the reasons we remember Jack is because London was at the town, the greatest newspaper town at the time, the greatest newspaper town that ever existed. I'm an ex-newspaper man, and I still love newspapers, even though they seem sadly to be going away on us now. But in any event, there were over 50 dailies in London in the late 1880s, and they ranged from the very highbrow, the very highfalutin London Times, down to the London Tatler, and there were even men called penny scribblers who were freelance reporters who would go to crimes and then race back to the newspapers and sell the stories to the newspapers, and they all competed desperately to sell papers on the streets. So it was very much, if it bleeds, it leads, which is still the reigning ethic of TV and newspaper journalism. So they all made Jack into a sort of an icon or a mythic figure of evil and despair, and they terrified their readers and sold millions of copies. And they were also, many of them were very tough on the police, And it didn't help matters that the police were so incompetent and kept making mistakes and kept arresting the wrong people. And so all in all, it was a time of great, social disturbance. There was also a terrible anti-immigration, anti-Semitic feeling in the air because thousands and thousands of people were emigrating, particularly from Eastern Europe, and Britishers were worried that their culture was being, you know, it's very much like it is today, and people are worried that, you know, the people who've been there think it's their country, and they don't want to share it with anybody, and they think that jobs will vanish. So there were so many dynamics of stress and conflict and exploitation in the air, and Jack sort of brought it all to a boil. And that's why I think one of the things about the story is that it's unsatisfying and that it has no ending. And one of the pleasures, not merely of my book, but of all the books, you know, there have been dozens of novels written about Jack, and that they all supply an ending. It's like it's a fictional other shoe dropping. You know, you want to know what happened in the apartment upstairs when the other shoe dropped. And it's one of the things that those of us who write about Jack the Ripper are selling.
We're visiting with Stephen Hunter. Stephen is the author of the latest novel, I, Ripper, a novel about Jack the Ripper. Now, you mentioned, you know, about newspapers and the fact you used to be a newspaper man, and you're very humble because you're a Pulitzer Prize winning newspaper man, and you just retired from reviewing movies for the Washington Post recently. Well, I guess about 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago.
Feels like it was in the 19th century, but actually, okay. It was in the 21st century. It was 2007.
Okay. So as a newspaper writer and as a reporter, you know about digging and finding the facts and make sure that everything's okay. And so in your novel, you feature a reporter, and he has been assigned to cover the murder of a prostitute.
Well, it was great fun for me because I was always a critic. And I was sort of a special guy. I admit that with some embarrassment. And I got to see the real reporters, and I think there are damn few of them today, but the real reporters don't have an agenda. They have what they have. It's, I think, far more important than agenda, and it's what drives great journalism. They have incredible curiosity. They want to know what's happening, and they have no larger dog in the fight. They're not trying to make social justice happen or protect the old order or anything like that. They want to find out what's happening, and my guy starts off as a critic, but because he has really good shorthand skills and is known to be very persnickety about fact, he's on an emergency basis sent to cover the first of the Jack murder sites. And he does such a good job that he gets that as his beat. And he and another reporter, they cover the beat, and the other reporter is a lot more unscrupulous than he is. And I sort of meant the two of them to stand for the higher tradition and the lower tradition of journalism. And the truth is that the business accommodates both sides. It's nice to say that all reporters are idealists, but not all reporters are idealists. Some have very exact and specific agendas. Some are exceedingly ambitious and want nothing but to work the system to gain power and prestige and move up through the ranks either of the paper or move from one paper to a better paper to a better paper to a better paper. And there, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of anger within journalism that the public never sees. There's a lot of resentment. Newspapers, I was in them for 28 years, believe me. I was in them for actually 38 years, 10 years I was doing something else, wasn't a film critic. But there are vast reservoirs of bitterness and resentment because a lot of people, you know, there's only so many jobs at the top, and a lot of people don't get them, and they're angry because they didn't get them, and that sort of spoils a lot of work because the reporter has got a chip on his shoulder for some professional failure that he feels was unjustly happened to him. And so it's a tricky position. It's a tricky profession, and it's full of tricky people. And to be honest with you, I was very glad to be done with it. I was too old for my job. I was in my, God, I guess I was in my early 60s then, and I understood that the movies were for boys in there between 14 and 18, or maybe between 8 and 18, and they no longer spoke to me. And I also knew that the paper couldn't fire me because there were a lot of, I think, generally sensible age discrimination issues. So basically what happened was I fired myself. I mean, I just knew that I was not interested in movies about Transformers, and I wasn't interested in movies about 21-year-old kids in with mousse in their hair wearing plaid shirts, you know, just none of that. So I said, I can't see another one of these movies. There were about four movies a year that interested me, so it was time for me to go. Believe me, I walked out the door very happily, and I have been very happy ever since.
Stephen Hunter is our guest. We are visiting with Stephen about his latest novel, I, Ripper, a novel about Jack the Ripper. As you described it, you don't watch movies very much. A lot of people actually don't watch movies generally, and if they do, they watch them online, Netflix, whatever. But for the benefit of our listeners, what does Stephen Hunter like to read in his leisure time, and or what has he read in the past?
Oh, this is going to be such a disappointing answer. Oh. I know you're proud of that question, and you think that's such a good question, and you're really going to and you're going to learn so much about me that you didn't want to know. What do I read? Well, the truth is I don't read books anymore, because one of the things that, and it's an older chap I no longer have, is the concentration to get through a novel. I've just seen too many movies, and I've spent too much time on the internet, and it's all quick, 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 cut, 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 next, 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 next. And I just don't have the, and I couldn't read War. If you held a gun to my head and put War and Peace in front of me, I'd say, save us both a lot of trouble. Shoot! you know what I read? I'm a gun guy. My Bob Lee Swagger books are about a Marine sniper. I read gun magazines. I read, I read almost entirely history. I go on these kicks where I have to know all there is to know about something. Some of it is research for books. Some of it is just the curiosity that I mentioned earlier. I just want to know all about this thing, even though it has no relevance to my life. So I'll look into that. But I really don't, I'm not a habitual reader. And it's embarrassing because occasionally another writer will say nice things to me about a book of mine. And I'll have to say, what I usually say is, oh, thank you so much, and congratulations on your career. You've really done, so well. And I hope he doesn't get that what I'm actually admitting is I haven't read one word he's ever written. And I have no idea who he is. You know, I just, I'm very glad that he likes my stuff, and I wish him the best. I have given blurbs. Every single one of them is a lie, and maybe the blurbs I've got have been lies. So that's a little inside baseball. That'll get me drummed out of the Writers Guild, believe me.
Well, you mentioned guns, and you enjoy reading about guns. One of your previous books, I think it came out in 2010, was I, Sniper, and a lot of people may not be familiar with the protagonist here.
Yes, and I like the that protagonist is Bob Lee Swagger, who is loosely, he's been in, I guess, 9 of my books. He's loosely based on or suggested by Carlos Hathcock, the great Marine sniper in Vietnam. And when I wrote the first one, I had no idea that I was going to write a series of books about one guy. It just sort of happened. And I made the decision also to age him naturally so that he is my age. He's now 69, my age. And it's a little old to be kicking down doors and shooting bad guys. You know what I mean? I mean, how can you do that if you can't even climb the steps? So I put Bob aside for this book, and people love Bob, and I'll probably go back and do at least one more, maybe two more Bob books. But his days of stair climbing and door kicking are long passed over, and he's become more of a forensic detective, and his specialty is he understands firearms events. He can look at a shooting and make sense of it in a way. I mean, one place he ought to go is Waco. I'm telling you, it's going to take him months to make sense of that one. And he's going to, you know, so I'll probably do some more. And I do, I've had a great life as a shooter and a gun owner. It's just been a fabulous life. And I'm just have had such great fun with it. I am so lucky that I've had so much fun.
Well, visiting with Stephen Hunter. Stephen is the author of the book, I, Ripper. One of the other books that you penned, Stephen, is Third Bullet. And this is very timely because, well, you know, 1963 was when President Kennedy was assassinated and in our home state here of Texas. And there have been many books written about conspiracy theories, who did it, why did they shoot Oswald, etc. Why don't you bring us up to speed on this book?
Well, it was very much like the I, Ripper book in that I got a really good idea, and the idea excited me a great deal, and I couldn't not write it. I just thought it was a terrific idea for a book, and believe me, I've written more books than I've had terrific ideas. It's one of the, if you're going to do this professionally, you've got to do that. And in fact, I was in the middle of a book when the third bullet idea occurred to me, and I almost quit that book because I was so excited about the third bullet. But in the end, I went ahead and finished it. It seems not to be one of my more beloved books. So the less we talk and say about it, the better. The third bullet was another. It was a great experience writing that book, and I did indeed spend lots of time in Texas and thinking about Texas and thinking about 1963. And I did sort of what I did in this book, and it's something that I seem to have a little bit of talent for, and that is I accept the hard data points of the Warren Commission, just as I accept the hard data points of Jack the Ripper's 3 months reign of terror in London. And the Warren Commission found a way to connect those data points. And it occurred to me that there had to be other ways. So instead, like most of the conspiracy theories begin with the assumption that the Warren Commission was part of the conspiracy and that everything it said was fake. Well, that's nonsense. I mean, how on earth, 6,000 people worked on that. You're not going to have a conspiracy in which 6,000 people keep it quiet. So I'm going to assume that those data points are accurate, but I'm going to look for other ways to get there, other explanations of what happened and why it happened. And that's what I did both with the third bullet and with the
I, Ripper.
I, Ripper. Duh, I can't remember the name of my own book. But in any event, and in both cases, what I came up with was kind of interesting, I think. I don't like big conspiracies. In my sense of the world, you know, all these guys write these huge books about huge conspiracies. It'll never happen. Conspiracies, by their very nature, have to be small. They've got to be limited to three or four operators and maybe a sponsor, all of it done very professionally. And that's both. That's what I locate in both books. The two books, although they're set, you know, miles apart, are really very, very similar in terms of taking something real in history, sticking as close to the record as possible, getting all the tiny details correct by using a very proficient researcher, and yet coming up with new explanations that I hope, if nothing else, get people to look at and re-examine what they now take for granted.
Stephen, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. We didn't have time to discuss another book that you wrote, but perhaps our listeners can go to your website and do research on American Gunfight, because this is a gun battle that unfolded in Washington, and it was involving a plot to kill President Truman. So you can go and look up that on Stephen's website. Stephen Hunter is the author of the book Eye Ripper. And once again, this is a novel based on the diary of Jack the Ripper, and a little bit behind the scenes, debunking a lot of the myths. And it takes you on a very nice tour, very good narrative about this awful crimes. Stephen, thank you for being with us.
You were great. I had a great time. I told you, I knew I would have fun. I hope you had fun.
I did. Thank you so much. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. We had help from Daniel Pauls. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.